All right, back on the record, August 28th, 2025, 10:20 a.m. Mr. Peacock had to step aside for a planning emergency, whatever that is, and he's back now. So just for redirect from Mr. Clements. So go ahead, Mr. Clements.
Thank you so much. And I actually have very little left, so we'll be done here quite quickly with Mr. Peacock to tend to the emergencies of the day. So the question we were talking about, we're about the neighboring home site, about 3/4 of an acre on the northwest side, had been cleared about 20 years ago.
Okay. Yep.
Were the screening buffers on the applicant's northwest side, so what's designated in the farm plan, were they aligned in configuration to match just the location of that neighbor's cleared area?
Not necessarily. It was more so about headlight impacts that would come from the driveway.
Okay. Are you, generally in your answers for us, are you equating light impacts and visual impacts as one and the same?
Headlight.
Go ahead. Okay, so I'll ask that again. Are you equating headlight impacts and visual impacts as one and the same?
Yes.
That is all I've got. We did not see it. We saw a cameo from your cat, but not the dog. So thank you, Mr. Heacock, today.
Yeah, the black cat was on the chair next to me.
I had a couple quick questions, Mr.
Very good. Yes, sir.
Clarification on your answers to Ms. Oda's questioning. So have you had the chance to hear all the testimony of this appeal? Have you been listening?
I think I've been in attendance for most of it. I have had to step away a couple of times.
Okay. So do you have a pretty good grasp of the impacts that Mr. Clemenson has presented in a SEPA appeal?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So when you responded to Ms. Oda that you believed all impacts were properly mitigated, does that include the information you got from this appeal?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And from all the testimony you've heard, do you see any reason to modify any of the MD&S mitigation measures, the warning or anything like that?
I do not.
All right. Yeah, that's just the questions I had. And just especially for Mr. Clemenson's benefit, the reason I asked is that I think a lot of times, you know, SEPA appellants, they bring up, you know, some impacts that might not have been fully addressed during the SEPA review. And you know, they think they've accomplished quite a bit there. But the problem is that there's case law that says that, well, if a SEPA responsible official failed to consider an impact, you know, before they issued their threshold determination, if they hear that about that impact during the appeal and still find that there's no reason for mitigation, then no harm done. They consider it at the appeal, and so it was properly evaluated and addressed. And so that's why I was asking, and that's the case that I'm referring to is Moss versus City of Bellingham.
Yes.
Anyway, okay. Thanks, Mr. Heacock. Appreciate your testimony as usual. And I guess as Mr. Clemenson said, you can go back to your planning emergencies for now. So
I've sorted that out in the
good break. Okay, glad
to hear. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. All right, so Mr. Clemenson, I guess Miss Oda, do you know, is Mr. Smith available? You said about 10:30. Could he come in now, or should we wait until after Mr. Clemenson's testimony?
I have not gotten confirmation from Jeff Smith, so maybe for time-wise, it would be good to start Mr. Clemenson.
Clemenson, I think, let me swear you in again.
It's just for scheduling purposes. Mine might be 90 minutes is what I'm hoping to clock out at. The question for Ms. Oda would be, Mr. Smith available later today as well?
Let me check.
I can message him on Teams to see if he's there.
That'd be great. I believe he's free from he should be free at 11. Or I mean sorry, 10:30 to 11, possibly to 1. So, but I just haven't gotten confirmation about that yet.
We should just wait the 5 minutes to get him here then.
Yeah. Possibly.
Yeah, just to be safe. I mean, yeah, I guess there's no
Mm-hmm.
point in getting 5 minutes for Mr. Clemenson and stopping. So yeah, why don't we wait till 10:30? We'll come back on at 10:30, and hopefully Mr. Smith will be available at that point.
Okay, I'll try to get a hold of them.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, still on the Clemenson appeal, and I'm not seeing Mr. Smith in the attendees or panelists yet. So he's not with us yet. Ms. Oda, any luck? Or I guess, if not, we'll just move forward with Mr. Clemenson until Mr. Smith shows up, and then we can switch over if we have to. Oh, he is coming. Okay, just got a text from Mr. Heacock or chat in the Zoom platform that he's coming.
I think Your Honor will be beneficial to finish up with the county at that point, and we can move on.
I guess while we're waiting, just a bit of housekeeping. So Miss Edwards is going to be available after 12:30 tomorrow. So just in terms of scheduling, we'd need to schedule her for the afternoon.
Okay,
I'm
yeah,
not
because I
sure.
think we had her at 9, but we can, I mean, that's fine by me doing it at, later. Does that work with you, Mr. Clemenson? 1 o'clock tomorrow?
Let me check quickly.
Also, it kind of depends on where we end up today as well.
Yeah, I can do 1 p.m. tomorrow.
Ms. Oda, does that work for you?
Yes. And also, sorry for the delay. I was on the phone with Jeff. He will be able to hop on here by like 10:35. Yes, he'll be able to we'll be able to get his questions done and then move on to Mr. Clementson. So thank you for the patience there.
Minutes. And Ms. Jones, does that work for you? 1 o'clock tomorrow?
It does, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just wait for. We got Mr. Smith on there. Okay.
He should
Hey,
pop
promoting
up
him.
as a panelist in just a second.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Mr. Smith. Let me swear you in real quick. Just raise your right hand. You swear firm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding.
Yes, you do.
Okay, welcome back. And I'll let Mr. Clemenson go ahead with the questioning.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smith. The first thing I need to do is share my screen because I'll be showing you some things here today. But give me a moment to ensure that I am sharing the right thing. And whenever I share something with you, I'll be trying to blow it up as much as possible for all of our eyesight.
Okay.
I just have a few questions for you today, and the focus of these questions will be on your site visits, the vegetative buffering that has been required as part of this permit. In his testimony, Mr. Heacock has deferred some of these questions to you.
Okay.
So I'm going to pull up. This is Exhibit A25. This is a standard information request checklist. This one happens to be from November 1st, 2023. This was the fourth review information request. In early November 2023, you wrote in this permit's notes and in an information request we see here that additional information and clarification was needed. In this request, you identified inconsistencies between the applicant's site plan and farm plan, and that one of the clarifications you sought was in regards to clearing limits. Can you provide additional details about why you were seeking this clarification on clearing limits at that time?
Well, we were looking at what the if that the easement was going to be used, and we're concerned about headlight glare and as far as retaining natural vegetation where possible to screen let's say the subject property from the adjacent neighbor.
Okay,
So I think
so
that, and there's critical areas also on the subject property on one side of the property.
certainly. So part of the concern was that on the civil plans, the site plan, it had been noticed that the clearing limits went right to the boundaries on all sides, and some of that area was potentially going to need to be mitigated for the headlight glare, correct?
Right.
Right. Okay. So I am moving on now to the notes on this permit. This is A309. I'm going to go to the end of page 13, I believe it is. So this would have been a note from March 20th, 2024. It is small. Let me know if you need me to blow it up here. Let me.
I can see it.
You can see it. Okay. Staff made a site visit to inspect plantings along wetland driveway. Observe significant progress been made towards critical areas visual impacts, and then the CEPA was going to be reissued at that time. In regards to the significant progress made along the driveway, what were you referring to in regards of that area here? Do you recall?
What I remember is there was the applicant had made the has had installed landscaping ar along that property, the property line, and along that area near where the driveway interfaces with the adjacent neighbor.
Okay.
So that's what I remember seeing, and we believe that the applicant was trying to cooperate and comply with what the regulations in Title 19.
Do you recall taking any photos of these plantings by the applicant on your site visit?
No, I did not. I didn't have a.
Understood. So this is a photo of the this is A135 we're looking at. This is a photo of that entrance you were just mentioning. So this is the driveway as it looks into from the northwest corner to the applicant's parcel. This was later, so this would have been April 2025, a year later. We're attempting to understand the location of the plantings you referenced in that earlier site visit. Were the trees you saw the ones behind the gate posts?
No.
Here or here?
No.
Okay.
Further so, towards the house on that, along that property line.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, because we saw that based on the amount of clearing, of course, so, you know, this is an after fact permit, and the amount of clearing, there was a potential for headlight glare, as well as the vegetation that was removed on the other side of the fence. So we were, through the farm management plan, we requested there be a landscape buffer along that property line. So also there was a barn proposed at the time, and we were wondering if there's any kind of farm activity that would maybe impact the adjacent property owner.
Okay.
Which is you.
All right. So we are looking at A136. So this is a view just further along the property line you were just describing. So the trees you were referencing from that site, was it, were they over here further along the drive?
I believe so. That's where we identified some areas, that critical areas along that property line. Okay. I don't know if I can't really tell from this photo.
Okay.
Okay. It looks, I was out there, it was winter time, and it wasn't, it was a different scene.
Okay. So I'm going to go back to A309. This is once again the notes on the permit. I'm going to be browsing down to page 14, I believe. Let me look at my notes here. So we're moving forward in time. March 4th, 2025. March 14th, 2025. So we're at page 15 in this file here. A note was entered by Cecilia Olson indicating that another site visit was conducted on the applicant's parcel, and the purpose of this visit was to once again inspect the buffer area plantings. Were you present at that visit?
No, I was not.
Okay. So you see in this note of the permit, the applicant was, the plantings by the applicant in the north and northwestern buffer were deemed sufficient. And this is attributed to by Cecilia Olson to, I assume, SH is Steve Heacock, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. On the final acceptance letter, and I'm going to pull up F34. So this is the third acceptance letter. I'm going to browse down to the revised conditions, which are on page 3. And I think the concern, and this has been raised earlier today with Mr. Heacock, landscaping requirements have been removed as a condition of approval after site visit determined the plantings to be adequate. You had nothing to do with that revised condition, Mr. Smith?
No.
Okay.
But again, too, as I remember right, this permit's been appealed. We haven't gone out to look at far as if these things are actually implemented as discussed, that to see if A, they're survived or they've actually been installed. So we'll need to verify that when and if this permit gets approved.
Okay. In his testimony, Mr. Heacock claimed no knowledge of why these plantings were deemed sufficient or adequate, and he could not explain this conditional update here. He indicated in his testimony that these notes and decisions were likely made by you. Can you think of any reason why these decisions were attributed to you?
I don't remember. I would kind of continue to make the condition. I wouldn't say eliminate a condition like that.
Okay. Thank you. One last question for you, and then back to the fun of the day for you. Finally, can you confirm that Title 17500 is the county's governing code for buffers like these CEPA-required ones that are conditioned into this permit decision?
Yes. Yeah. 17500.027 buffers. Yes.
Okay. That's all I have for you.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Smith, Still some cross from the other two attorneys, but that's probably not going to take too long. Ms. Soder, did you have any questions, Mr. Smith?
I don't believe that I do.
Okay. Mr. Derland, any questions?
No questions.
All right, Mr. Smith. Yeah, it was pretty easy after all. So not a bad Friday after all. So
all right.
Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us today. So
all right. Thank you.
All right. I guess, Mr. Clemenson, now it's your turn. Right? You're going to give us your testimony?
Yes, that is correct. I stop sharing, but I should go ahead and do that since we didn't have any.
Carry in again, and then we'll go until about noon and take a lunch break at that time. Unless it's just like 10 minutes away, then we'll. Yeah. All right. Do you swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
Absolutely. That is why we're here. Okay, make sure I've got my base light up for all of you. So before starting, again, I'm hoping to get this done here. I may not finish by noon, but I don't want to take all day with this. Before starting, I should introduce why I'm here. I've been passionate about forest restoration all my life. As a youth, I planted coast redwood trees in Northern California that are now 80 to 100 feet in height. Over the course of my forest restoration work in Kitsap County, I've handled and installed many hundreds of bare root and nursery stock plants, removed extensive noxious species, amended a lot of soil, and sought to protect critical areas. My consultations with veteran arborists from Seattle at my Southworth parcel in particular have led to an extensive action plan for restoring those forest lands with the help of my family. My passion for protecting that work is why I am here today. I'm going to cover two different areas in this testimony. First will be a concentration on the historical and ongoing impacts of the conversion. And this will take the significant majority of the time. That's why we're here, primarily is impacts. After that, I'll wrap up topics that are relevant to the evaluation and conditioning as related to those impacts, as well as my credibility. Since mitigation is the core focus of this appeal and its relief requests, all these topics inevitably tie back to the impacts and their conditioning. We ran through some of the specific impact evidence with Mr. Edwards and Mr. Heacock, and I do not intend to duplicate all of that line of testimony. My own personal perspective on some of this evidence may be helpful to understand the context and scope of the impacts, though. So I'll be showing selected impact-related exhibits while merely referencing related evidence that reinforces the same points. Some impacts will not be discussed here as they are adequately covered in the written testimony. Again, the perspective now is primarily for me personally rather than a pro se appellant. Open up. A78. Before beginning, I want to quickly remind the examiner about the orientation of my parcel compared to that of the applicant's. This diagram in exhibit A78 is several years old, but it still conveys the basic orientation of the parcels. The proposed extension of the easement road at that time is no longer intended to be included in this permit, as we know. My family's proposed home on the northwestern lot currently has an open building permit that is delayed in part because we do not know yet of the outcome of this permit's potential impact mitigations. The first impact topic per the elements of the environment that I will cover for you today is related to air quality, and that's specifically dust and wind. I'm opening up A173. This is an overhead shot. We've seen this drone shot before. This is from the real estate listing for the applicant's parcel back in 2017. After the deforestation in 2019, the newly uninhibited winds coming from the Puget Sound to our east and southeast became evident. Having commuted every day for years from the Southworth Ferry Terminal, I know that the wind does tend to travel up the bowl of the parking lot towards the applicant's parcel. next to the next exhibit. The loss of the forest canopy, and this is A174, exhibit A174. The loss of the forest canopy has now allowed these winds to blow strongly across the properties to the north and northwest of the applicants. My wife and I noticed no such prevailing wind at that location prior to the clearing. Now, the most powerful impacts are felt along the boundary of my own parcel, especially at the applicant's entrance. During other testimony, we witnessed a few of the wind and dust-related videos showing the impacts of this area. And in interest of time, I'm only going to play one of those for you now while I speak about them. This will be Exhibit A205. The wind videos are exhibits A182 and A193. I'm not going to show you any of these. What's important to notice, however, about that whole set of videos is that the prevailing winds exist all year around. They bring biting cold in the winter, oppressive heat in the summer at that entrance area. There are times when it is downright uncomfortable, if not even painful, standing there. You'll be able to hear the wind noise in the microphone in many of those videos from A182 to A193. The dust videos, like the one we're seeing here now, are exhibits A194 to A205. The final four of those exhibits collect a month of sampled 2023 dust incidents that were sped up in succession to more clearly show the extent of the problem. The remainder of the dust videos are from 2022, but these impacts are still occurring. Note that some of the videos show dust impacts not involving a vehicle or other equipment, not this particular video perhaps, but in others. When a vehicle is involved, the dust continues to flow from the applicant's parcel across ours long after that vehicle has passed. When watching these videos, note that the dust is always moving from the left, where the applicant's northwest corner is, to the right, which is the front of my neighboring home site. My family is extremely worried about the health impacts of not only the dust, but animal allergens that could accompany this wind once the livestock is installed. The blowing allergens from the animals that could exist on the property line as proposed on the farm plan could pose significant health risks to my wife in particular. This concern, along with potential pest issues associated with livestock so close to the boundary, is in part why we are highly fearful of these particular impacts. I'm going to end this and move on to A176. In the wintertime, these uninhibited winds have caused wind snap in both our forest and the one to our south, as seen in A176 and the next photo. I would recommend anybody unfamiliar with the term wind snap to Google it along with the word definition or tree, and you'll see that it denotes trees that snap off partway up their trunk due to wind. Some are snags, some are not. As also seen in this exhibit, A177, note that all these trees are falling away from the applicant's parcel, which is seen in the background to the left. Exhibit A175 shows what we regularly see with burned piles on the applicant's parcel. The wind almost always blows the smoke westward. Note here, additionally, that the applicant's usual burn pile location is seen in the southeastern portion of their conversion that was not entirely declared in their civil plans. We'll see an overhead view of that later in Exhibit A304. I will refrain from showing the wind damage associated with the protest sign on my parcel. We already saw and discussed that evidence during Mr. Edwards' testimony. Those exhibits are A178 to 180. What's important to know from that event is that wind at the northwest corner of the applicant's parcel was strong enough to bend a 2.25-inch wide iron U-post at the ground. This is some very strong, persistent wind at times. Next exhibit is A181. Further south, along the most impacted portions of that northwest corner of the applicant's parcel, my wife and I have begun to install a solid cedar fence to protect from these winds. The posts for these fences were sunk 3 to 4 feet into the ground using concrete molds. Within weeks, the wind had pushed so hard against these posts that the fence began leaning away from the applicant's parcel, even in just the 7 foot tall sections. Because of the topography, some of these sections had to be 1 to 2 feet taller, and those were permitted with Kitsap County. We knew the wind was strong here, but this surprised us. We had to right the fence and reinforce it with double posts to survive these winds. Exhibit A206. Is a diagram showing the current fencing installed by my family and by Greg Anderson and Jean Clark to the north to protect ourselves from impacts. Other areas, however, remain exposed. In exhibit A207, if I can get there, my scrolling. Is proposed relief based on what we're experiencing? These are the areas of the highest wind impact. Since solid fencing can be considered as a buffer enhancing protection by Title 17500, we included this diagram in this appeal to show broader possible protections to deal with the areas that are still most exposed. Note, however, one prevailing problem here is that the northwest corner of the road entrance will remain an issue even in this rendering. Once again, this is A173. We saw this exhibit just before, but this is within a different context now. The next impact topics I'll be discussing relate to odor and noise, both of which my wife and I have noticed to be exacerbated by the wind impacts. I've commuted on the aging diesel drift and Issaquah class vessels assigned by Washington State Ferries to Southworth for many years. Their emissions can be potent. I had never noticed these emissions from my Southworth parcel until after the conversion, and now they are sometimes discernible on my southeastern boundary. Same photo in A208, but different diagram. And this relates to noise. It is noisy near the ferry terminal sometimes, and that has changed since the conversion for us. The applicant's parcel sits between Cedric Road, which is State Route 160, and Southworth Drive. They both receive significant ferry traffic, including loud motorcycles and patiently disembarking sailings. I've commuted with the Harley-Davidson motorcycle drivers. Most of them are blue-collar tradesmen. When they exit the ferry in the afternoons and the evenings, 20 of them can roar all at once. Some of them travel up Southworth Drive, but the majority turn onto Cedric Road. In either case, they impatiently hit the gas on those roads at the same time, and the sound is deafening. Note that the parcels along Southworth Road have installed hedging to protect themselves from the noise, including this parcel here, which is one of the interested parties on this particular permit. On my parcel, I could always hear the motorcycles and other loudly disembarking traffic, including large trucks, from the Southworth Drive side before the conversion. Now I hear it in stereo. The elimination of the forest has increased Cedric Road traffic noise for those of us to the west and to the north of the applicant's parcel. On top of the traffic noise, you also have the diesel engine noise and horn blasts of the ferries themselves, along with loud music from the homes and the vehicles on Level Lloyd to the east. It's these homes here in the foreground. Evidence of this type of noise can be heard in video exhibits A209 and A210. I'm not going to play those for you here because the sound doesn't often convey particularly well in these Zoom meets. So I hope just rely on you to listen to those on your own. I am moving on now to the next impact topic, which relates to climate and Earth. So the A133. With worsening heat and soil issues, once again related to the loss of the canopy of the newly exposed winds, we have additional impacts. What we're looking here is at that northwest area where we were just discussing with Mr. Heacock and Mr. Smith about SEPA required buffering being required in that area. What we're particularly taking note of is what's in the foreground. Even as Mr. Edwards stated in his testimony, it's hotter in his parcels to forested areas now. What wasn't stated is that the same condition now afflicts the neighbors as well, causing a new need to irrigate vegetation near the clearing and contend with worsening soil conditions. As seen in this exhibit, some of the pasture grass near the western boundary has struggled to take root after several years. I can personally testify that the soil in this area is still in dire need of amendment. In exhibit 270, we see how much sandy loam fill was pushed over the top of the native topsoil in the timber trespass area on my parcel. So again, this photo was taken, if we look at the previous exhibit, this photo would have been taken in about where I'm mousing over right here. My wife and I had to wait years to start restoring the majority of the soil in this area because it sits within the easement that the applicants had proposed developing. But similar conditions run along both sides of the boundary. The soil can be very hard, devoid of any significant layer of organic material. It is our hope that the solid boundary fencing option would provide a more immediate relief from the heat and the wind impacts on the soil in the many years that it would take for the tree buffers on the applicant's parcel, as we see in A133, to actually provide meaningful shelter. Moving on to A269. This is the same view that we were just viewing, looking at, but this was almost immediately after the conversion. Timber trespass, of course, is generally a civil matter. However, its existing impacts are a compounding factor on the larger picture. An alternate view of this is also available in A268 from the opposite direction. Clearly, soil amendment was required on my neighboring parcel. DCD supervisor Samantha Long, who was the supervisor for Ms. Olson during the central portion of this review, indicated to me in 2022 that the impacts of the timber trespass could be factored into the mitigating conditions for this permit, which is why they are being raised now. As seen in exhibit A267, again, we have seen this during the testimony with Mr. Edwards. Perhaps nowhere are the heat and soil impacts as troublesome as in the timber trespass area to the applicant's north. This corner has been devastated since the conversion, and I can testify that the owner, Debbie Keith, has expressed repeated concerns to me about this result. And that is why, in part, we have been donating trees to help protect this area. You'll see here on the left. In exhibit 266, same view, but during the conversion. So some of the trees had been cut, but not all. The younger trees and understory were pretty much largely still intact. This would have been April of 20, 19. In A66, note the canopy protection in the minimal amount of noxious weeds in the understory on this parcel to the north compared to the previous view 3 years later. Indeed, my wife and I donated the trees to that area to help protect the Keith property. And these trees, as seen in A267, require constant watering. Fortunately, we have enough hose length to reach those from one of our yard hydrants. The cedar on the far left is behind the gatepost is struggling. The soils are perpetually dry due to the combination of the wind and the heat. Moving on to A221. In Mr. Edwards' testimony, we saw photos of the broader issues with that particular parcel to the north, the Keith parcel. Exhibit A221 here shows the cedar dieback experienced in the area. You'll see there's actually four cedars here in total. We saw different views of these in A216 and A222 to A224. These trees were not in such a condition and certainly not entirely dead in some cases in 2018. And I encourage you to look at the additional views of those in A216 and A222 to view how the dieback has really occurred at that parcel of the north. A227. Is what we're looking at right now. Trees nearby to the west are also contending with the impacts. The western red cedars are particularly struggling in this area. They receive these climate impacts and are significantly thinning and starting to die back from the top to bottom, which is what we typically see with them when they are in poor condition. Additional views of this troublesome trend can be seen in exhibits A225 through A229. Since 2022, however, I have been deep watering mature cedars as best as possible in the summer to reverse their decline, and these efforts have been somewhat successful. It takes a significant amount of water and time, however. Moving on to A211. Among the younger trees, we're seeing far more death in the areas near the applicant's conversion than in others around my forest restoration project. And that's how we're measuring the tree impacts here, is we're comparing the impacts that we're seeing along the boundary with the applicant's parcel and comparing that per capita to the tree health that we're seeing in the other quadrants in the forest restoration project. This first photo is of a dead Douglas fir, this exhibit A211. Douglas firs are pretty hardy. Among all the trees we planted, they and the Sitka spruces are pretty difficult to kill. Note in this photo and in subsequent photos from A212 through A218, these are all photos of young dead trees near the applicant's parcel, usually within 25, 30 feet. And the applicant's parcel is in the background of all of them. And this extends through a few Douglas firs, a few grand firs, and Western hemlock, among others. I have not witnessed this quantity of tree death in the rest of my forest restoration combined, quite frankly, despite planting many hundreds of trees and protecting existing ones there. Nor have we witnessed any tree death or dieback in this boundary area prior to the conversion. It didn't happen. Among the tree stock that was planted and lost, the sources and handling and watering of these trees were the same as in the rest of the forest restoration project. In some cases, these trees along the boundary are actually provided more water. The conditions along the full boundary of the conversion are simply that much harsher. And my wife and I have no other explanation for why we have lost so many trees in that. This is exhibit A233. This is a 2025 photo from earlier this year. I do believe we looked at this with Mr. Edwards. The tree dieback on the southern boundaries of the applicant's clearing has become evident as well. Note the dieback across the top of several trees. If we go back in time and look at A11, this is the 2019 view. No such tree death out there was evident. Whether the reason is canopy loss, root disruption, or something else, this is exactly what we are seeing around the perimeter of this conversion, including on our property. So once again, we're looking at trees like this and this, as opposed to the condition at the time of the conversion. We often see, just as a quick aside, we often see stories about climate change and how deforestation affects surrounding canopy. We're seeing it in living action. In A13, note that the understory of the forest will suffer as well. You know, we talk a lot about trees, but the understory is extremely important, especially to wildlife. In exhibit A13, we can see understory remaining on the north side or the left side of the applicant's drive. This was at the time that the stop work order was issued. In this area, we see both salal and ferns were close to roadway. And the original state of this exact vegetation, if you want to see them, was available in A150. This was back during the conversion, and it was even a little bit fuller at that time. Interestingly, now in exhibit A136, we see the same area alongside that roadway is reduced to only mowable grass. Since the parcel has been under a stop work order during the entire time, in the interim between these two photos, one has to assume that the understory in this newly exposed northern buffer area has perished due to the harsh conditions. Again, for comparison, we're comparing this area to what we see here. Moving on to A230. It should also be noted, by the way, that the area I was just pointing to is within the vicinity of the required buffer for the light glare on the northern side. The aesthetics impacts relating to privacy and view are intertwined with the preceding climate-oriented impacts. We're looking at A230, which shows the western boundary of the clearing. The natural dieback in this area is now exposed since the clearing, of course, and unlike grand firs, these Douglas firs will not regrow lower limbs. Even the grand firs in the area are taking a long time to reestablish their lower limbs. Additional views of this exposed dieback exists in exhibits A231 and A232. This area we're looking at now is also where the forest restoration project is affected the most by wind snap because of the loss of the neighboring canopy protection. Aesthetically speaking, this is A96 that we're viewing. The action reveals views of only the applicant's agricultural operations and other surrounding homes. Because the applicant's parcel occupies the top of a hill, no water or other meaningful distance views were revealed for others. This photo, by the way, for reference, is from 2022, I believe. The applicant's forced removal, however, as mentioned earlier, was clearly discernible from the ferry terminal. It's something that could be watched in action by everybody waiting for the boats. In A164, after the deforestation, the applicants repainted their home and shed from a redwood color to white. These buildings are far more obvious because of the color change. Prior to the deforestation, however, these buildings could not be seen by any neighbor. You could not see any light from these buildings either. The aforementioned fencing installed by the neighbors up here on the north boundary is not only to block light, wind, and heat impacts, but it's also, of course, for privacy that was suddenly lost. The applicants challenged some of this fencing through the DCD and in court. Moving to A159. We've seen this photo before. It is the base slide that I've been using for this presentation. The view we see here in 2017, exhibit A159, is from my home site towards the applicant's home site. In other words, it's taken straight as if I was looking at the applicant's home. This photo is from shortly before, I believe, the applicants purchased their parcel. From the same position, A160. After the clearing, the applicant's agricultural operations would be visible through the remaining sparse buffer in the easement, and the applicant's home is now visible, structures are light. Since our home would be two stories in height, these new exposed views would now be all the more apparent. It should be noted that if the easement were ever cleared for an additional roadway serving the applicant's parcel or the one behind, we were just talking about this, the buffer of trees that you see in this photo would be eliminated. The trees here, the trees here. This is why my family, quite frankly, filed a legal claim contesting the validity of the easement, because the combined impacts were going to be catastrophic to us. Additional before and after views can be seen in exhibits A161 and A62, along with additional views from the northern parcels in A164 and A165. I have a quick sip here. I believe what I'm going to show you might be the only other video I'm going to show you. We have not seen this before. This is A163, and I'm going to let this run while I'm speaking as to its importance. The 2017 home video seen here is my most heartbreaking evidence for me personally. My family was embarking at the time upon the start of our forest restoration efforts at the time. We would set up chairs near the entrance of the applicant's parcel and watch wildlife and picnic. Not only was the location private, but it was protected from all the impacts now making that area inhospitable. Nobody recreates where I'm standing in this video now. In fact, the area is the current focus for impact mitigation efforts on our own parcel. It's an area set aside for our protection rather than for our enjoyment. The mitigating conditions being proposed for this permit would not bring our chairs back to that spot for decades, if even then. Incidentally, one of the two boys, as you're seeing here, is headed off to college in a few weeks. That is how long we have been dealing with this permit and the impacts of this action. Trying to protect ourselves for so long has been exhausting. And this video is important because, of course, the privacy that you see in the background, we cannot recreate in this area now. That we are actively terracing the hill there to try to build up vegetation along this top where you see grass, because we need to protect ourselves in the event that this appeal does not succeed.
Mr. Clemens, or Mr. Yeah. Examiner, can I ask a clarifying question just about this video? It appears, just based on where the gate is, it looks like this clearing is all on your property. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. This was the meadow that was cleared in 2005.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
So I'm moving on to A271. This is an exhibit that Mr. Heacock has mentioned twice. Perhaps it tickled his fancy. Same location. We were just seeing the chairs standing that location. One of the things my boys would watch from that hill were the bald eagles that frequented that area. They were always seen concentrated on one of the boundary trees along the applicant's side nearby the easement. And I'm going to show that in A273. We always love seeing dramatic trail cam footage, and this is among the more interesting that we have captured. So there is an inset here that shows you in the lower right where this tree was located on the applicant's parcel. It was right on the boundary here, right alongside the easement. And of course, it's being pointed to here in red as well. We had witnessed this suspected eagle's nest in the unusual crown of this tall fir tree for a while. It was outside the clearing limits of the danger tree permit and resided close to, if not on, the property line. We're quite frankly not we're not certain that Mr. Heacock would have looked at this tree given its position. But another view of this exhibit, of this, can be seen in exhibit A272. Obviously, there's no mitigating condition now for that tree or that nest. I'm hopeful that buffers reestablished around the applicant's parcel will help protect the remaining trees in that area that could hold the next eagle's nest. All right, on to A245. While changing deer populations like what we see in A245 are not inherently a SEPA consideration for inevitable impacts, and we've discussed that, my restoration project has witnessed a sudden increase in the amount of damage to neighboring young trees caused by the young males rubbing their antlers on. Deer did not previously exist in such numbers at this location, and little deer damage was observed in the years prior to the conversion. In A236, we see a sample fir tree killed by deer. If you own forested property, or even if you just have a few trees in your yard, you may have encountered deer doing this. But this is reflected in several other exhibits, ranging from A234 to A245. This issue has become so major that I have been forced to purchase welded wire fencing and posts to protect every young tree on that side of the restoration project. We're talking about the southeastern quadrant adjacent to the applicants. The material cost is $7 per tree, and it is needed to protect all species. We're talking young fir, cedars, hemlock, sequoia, redwoods, pines, spruce, oaks, alders. The deer will avail themselves of all of them. In A244, we see a giant sequoia damaged by deer. The applicant's parcel is seen in the background. You will notice this in several of the photographs, the proximity of the applicant's parcel. As mentioned before, these instances are far more common near the conversion area. Even though the mass majority of the trees in the restoration project that have been planted actually exist in the other quadrants of that parcel. Roughly half the trees that are seen in these exhibits died as a result of the rub, including some planted as explicit buffer protection alongside the conversion. All right. I'm going to shift now to the next impact topic, which is light. Are we okay to keep going? Does anybody need a break?
Keep going. Yeah.
We're good. Okay. I'm going to pull up A166. This shared diagram is from a 2022 community submission to the county DCD that they did not consider until direct adjacent neighbors more specifically cited the headlight impacts, which finally got Mr. Heacock's attention. The neighbors knew, I mean, we knew as a community what the impacts of headlights were going to be here, because in part we were already experiencing them. This, since it was submitted in 2022, this diagram still shows the easement development, which can be disregarded. Except, of course, with the possibility that if the easement is developed at some point in the future, we will run into the same headlight impacts. In this case, at the time, we were extremely concerned of headlight impacts coming straight up into the back of our home site. because there'd be no buffer remaining. With the forest removed, the headlight impacts come from within the applicant's parcel and from level Lloyd Lane across multiple sides of the parcel. We are already familiar with this, as I mentioned, that the one north central neighbor had the pronounced impacts. These are the worst up here. But the light from vehicles, the driveways of the properties to the east also shine in the parcels to the north and west, and headlight impacts do affect the northwestern parcel up here owned by the Keith family. The applicants and their associated traffic, including copious delivery vehicles, have been noted to cause up to 22 vehicle passages across their parcel per day, many of them at night during the darker months. It's a fair amount of traffic. We do not believe that the neighbors should carry the cost for all the association, the mitigation for blocking this newly exposed light. We have seen exhibit A167 before during Mr. Edwards' testimony, showing the ambient light impacts from the ferry terminal and homes in the area. The meadow at the center of my neighboring parcel used to be pitch black at night. Now, light always flows in from the applicant's side, regardless of weather conditions. Additionally, while considered a climate impact, technically, the deforestation has caused a significant increase in the amount of sunlight glare for the neighbors to the east, north, and west as well. Exhibits A168 to A171 illustrate these impacts. So the final impact topic area I'll discuss is related to plants more generally, and I'll touch upon the noxious weeds, the original site conditions, and most importantly, the buffering. Next, we're moving on to A258. Neighbors to the west and northwest have been dealing with a significant invasion of noxious weeds and pasture grass since its conversion, seen in one small portion here in Exhibit A258. This proliferation requires manual mitigation in areas that had not seen these species in the past. These weeds are choking out the native understory, including the sword fern suffering from exposure. The applicants have touted their initiative to control the noxious weeds in their parcel, and Mr. Heacock has commended them as well. But there's been no suggestion on what mitigation can help any of the rest of us dealing with this issue now for the first time on the sides of our boundaries. In Exhibit A254, this photo is standing about halfway down the applicant's western property line looking south. The wetland area would be off, the wetland buffer restoration area would be off here in the distance. In this photo, we see no presence of noxious weeds in the forest to the central west of the conversion whatsoever. Again, this was shortly after, this is November 2019. In A255, three years later, in 2022, we witnessed not only the noxious species, but pasture grass entering the forest. And this is another important thing that we're going to be discussing. Before and after photos from another nearby area can be seen in exhibits A256 and A257. We cannot support the understory with additional watering, as we've been attempting to do in these areas, without also supporting the invasive species. In A251, this is closer to the northwest corner, looking south. So to the right is the easement area, to the left is the applicant's conversion. The invasion of the pasture grass that was seeded with the DCD's approval after the conversion is particularly cumbersome to remove from all the boundary areas. As we see here, the grass is spread into the neighboring forest restoration efforts. Removing it requires regular manual labor. It takes time away from the rest of our restorative work. Scotch broom, tansy ragwort, bracken fern, and other species at the boundaries can be seen extensively in exhibits A246 to A253. One final exhibit along this line is A261. This is about 100 feet on into the maybe 80 to 100, probably, yeah, almost 100 into the forest to the west of the applicants. You can see their silt fencing up here, higher up on the hill. This photo was taken in 2022. Likely due to the newly prevailing winds in conjunction with the additional sunlight, these weeds and pasture grasses are appearing 100 feet into the previously natural forest to the applicant's west, including this area seen here. We view solid fencing as the best immediate solution to this issue, even though that won't solve the proliferation already experienced. Additional impacts from this spread, including the Himalayan blackberry, can be viewed at the boundaries on neighboring parcels in exhibits A259 to A265. All right, gonna take a quick sip here. So we're going to be talking about, on the subject of pasture grass, we're going to be talking about pasture for a moment. Next will be A306. The applicant's parcel is highlighted in green. This is the Kitsap County parcel viewer that we have seen shots from before. However, we have not included the 2018 photography what we had shared to this point. The applicant's submittals and Mr. Heacock's testimony both indicate the pasture vegetation existed on the parcel prior to the conversion. Mr. Heacock has testified that there was an acre, perhaps, of such pasture on the land in 2018, which is why he referenced it in the SEPA determination. These assertions are inaccurate. In this exhibit we're seeing now, A306, I know that the clearing on my parcel to the northwest is 3/4 of an acre in size because it was measured from my house permit and associated nearby surface area calculations. Obviously, Mr. Heacock's contention that there was a larger area of pasture on the applicant's parcel isn't true, and this is why we know it. I was familiar with the applicant's parcel prior to the action. The forest immediately north and to the south of the applicant's home site was thinner, but it contained forest understory rather than pasture grass. Mr. Edwards has affirmed in his testimony as well that pasture was forested aside from the immediate home site prior to the action. He also affirmed that pasture grass he referred to on the SEPA checklist was referencing the post-conversion condition of the parcel. This distinction is very important to us because obviously the SEPA decision indicates that this is an expansion of pasture more than just a creation of new pasture on the parcel. All right, I'm a little bit more than halfway through here, so we'll see how much of this I can get through here before we go to lunch. The final aspect of the impact measurement relates to buffering, both in the remaining existing vegetation and in the mitigating conditions. We heard from Mr. Smith just this morning about the concerns the DCD had about the clearing limits and related to the existing vegetation that had been left around the exterior of the parcel where buffering might be required. The SEPA determination's conditioning applies buffering as its primary mitigation measure here. Although, as I was questioning Mr. Heacock, these buffers only apply to a small minority of the boundary areas on the west and north sides, no protection at all for anything on the east side. We'll be opening up A128. One complication of the buffers is that some of the boundary areas, like we see here in 2022, that were designated for buffering by the county, in these areas, sparsely surviving portions of the original forest still exists. We're seeing the north side of the applicant's parcel. This is level Lloyd Lane to the east. And you can see some of Mr. Anderson's fence in the central north here. What's important in this photo is the sample of such an area on the northern boundary of existing surviving vegetation that is shown within clearing limits within this permit and have been approved to those clearing limits. In A131, we can see a smaller surviving area of natural vegetation on the west side. This is also viewable in exhibit A130. You can also, if you want to see more vegetation naturally surviving on the north side, that was A129. But as we've seen in the civil plans, which is exhibit F19, the county again has approved the clearing of this remaining vegetation. The applicant's verbal assurances that they will not actually clear these areas are not really relevant because we have a history of their intentions changing. We've also heard a lot about flexibility and potentially changing plans from them in the future. So the concern as expressed to Mr. Smith about the clearing limits, delineations, and whether you know this was going to be clarified was related to these particular buffers. Unfortunately, that clarification never came in printed form. Moving to A141, when I say printed form, I mean plans. Although these areas, such as the western surviving vegetation, are designated as buffers in the SEPA determination and the farm plan map, the latter is, of course, exhibit F23. Mr. Heacock has made clear in his November 2024 red text email that you might recall to Mr. Edwards, that's exhibit A66, that these areas that we're seeing in the foreground here do not actually qualify by kits of code as satisfying SEPA required buffering. A similar view of this can be seen in A139. Meanwhile, along the central west of the applicant's parcel, we see exhibit 140, a picture taken this year. No buffering has been required in this area. This was the area I was asking questions about to Mr. Heacock about the fact that the buffering is not required along the entirety of the boundary between my parcel and the applicant's parcel, even though impacts may still be in existence there. There's about 10 feet of partially surviving forest understory along the applicant's boundary. That would be behind the silt fencing that is still somewhat standing. In the distance to the right is the wetlands buffer restoration. So we see it growing up here. This was Mr. Heacock expressed pleasure with, and I think we all agree is great. On the knoll in the foreground to the left is the location of the approved parking pad and potential future barn that the applicants have indicated throughout, on and off throughout time. An additional view of this area from even further south can be seen in A138. Again, no buffers have been called for in this area. The impacts in the neighboring forest lands adjacent to this area are significant to us. Now, this is an area where the tree breakage, as we mentioned before, the dieback have concentrated. It's where the noxious weeds and pasture grass have proliferated the furthest westward. And it's where the applicant structures are located. And it is why we are very concerned about the fact that the buffering was not required in this area. We witnessed in earlier testimony this diagram that was produced this year. This is essentially just an overhead shot. This is A155 that shows areas in yellow that involve the sparse buffer vegetation that survived that we were just taking a look at that are SEPA non-compliant as buffers. We saw those in A139 and A141. Most of the yellow area to the left is included in the buffer location detailed in the farm plan map seen in exhibit F23 and cited in the SEPA decision. In other words, most of this area that I'm mousing over the is actually in the area that the farm plan indicates will be buffering. In the green are sections in which the applicants have preemptively planted the small conifers to satisfy the SEPA conditions potentially. And we'll be looking at those areas next. Again, I'm going to have a quick sip here. These preemptive buffers can be seen in this exhibit, which is A134, and from the opposite view in exhibit A143. Although Title 17500 designates much larger trees to be planted in either solid or separation buffering, Mr. Eacock viewed these plantings in early 2025, and per the notes and per the lead permit reviewer Cecilia Olson, he deemed them to be adequate and sufficient per exhibits A308 and A309. It was at this time that a landscape plan requirement, which had been formally required, was also seemingly dropped. Though Mr. Heacock has hedged on that now in his testimony, indicated that the plan might be required after permit issuance. I will be moving quickly now through views of the northwest corner of the applicant's parcel. We've seen many of these already, but I'm going to start with A135. We saw this photo shared with Mr. Smith just earlier this morning. The preemptive buffering installed by the applicants is not extended up much into this area, but a little bit of this that's viewable over here on the far right. But in the center mass of this impact area, no buffering has been installed, and there is no guarantee that the county will require any buffering in this area at this time. Again, these are the areas of the greatest focused impacts. I'll show A136. Different view that we also showed earlier today, and then A137 is the final view. You can see the buffers planted a little bit here along the north. So there's a handful of trees mixed into this area here. Again, moving on to 137. The partially constructed boundary fence that was leaning is at the far left. We're looking straight up into the Keith property to the north of the applicants. One more time, we're going to take a look at A151. These are actually photos from a video that was taken at the time. The video itself is not included as an exhibit, but the screenshots essentially tell the story. You'll see the logging operator is at work here on the right. They got slash piles and they got a staging area here. But what's important in this April 2019 video is that in the foreground, you see the young cedar buffer that existed adjacent to the applicant's entrance prior to the conversion. These trees, of course, were all removed and not been replaced, despite my expressing to the applicants how important those trees were to our protection and the impacts that we're feeling in that corner now. In A152, we are panning slightly to the left, standing in the same place. So this is the north boundary line over here of the applicant's parcel. While the neighbors have replanted some of the trees in the area where those firs exist on the left, these new plantings are further from the roadway. The applicants have declined to allow young trees to be planted on the neighboring parcel in the exact locations of the removed ones seen here that I'm mousing over now, as they claim such trees would be obstructive to the passage on the drive. Mr. Heacock, though, has confirmed to us both in person and elsewhere that the trees 4 feet off a roadway can be easily limbed as to avoid inhibiting vehicle passage, which is what the previous owners of the applicant's parcel had clearly done here. This view is looking the opposite direction. So move, maybe 50 feet further into the applicant's parcel, looking back towards the entry.
Mr. Examiner, can I ask a clarifying question here?
Okay.
More or less just kind of wondering what direction we're going in here. I think we've pretty well established what the condition of the property is and was. So I guess I'm just wondering what the point is and how much longer we're going to keep doing this.
Is that directed at me or is that directed at the examiner?
Well, I guess for you now.
I was going to imagine you're directing at me. This is all about just buffering. That's all we're talking about now. This is the condition of the parcel as to buffering. And the mitigations and how the mitigations have been applied as opposed to what the appellants are asking for. And part of the reason this is relevant is because we see what the buffering used to look like in terms of the young trees at these particular areas. So we know that historically this vegetation has existed in this area
before. Okay, understood. And I think we've established that.
Okay, there's not much more here. Okay, I think.
Well, listen, I still find the visuals worthwhile, so go ahead.
Okay. So again, this is A153. We're looking back towards the gate, towards the northwest corner. This helps get a visualization from the opposite direction. I don't think we've had a shot from this direction so far. As the trees as they originally existed, especially on the right, if you look at the fir trees on the right, those were not obstructive because of the position of the gate post. The cedar clump on the left side can be seen in full from this perspective, also in A154, but I won't show that. In A150, this is a shot that was somewhat referenced a little bit earlier. We were looking at the condition of the forest understory over here, where the buffering is protecting the northernmost parcel, and you know that this understory was pretty voluminous at the time of the clearing. But what's interesting about this photo is that here and also in the easement, there are trees 4 feet off the roadway that were not historically obstructive, and this shows the mature vegetation at that distance, further in about 60, 70 feet. Further into the applicant's parcel as the roadway starts turning itself. These exhibits are primarily meant to answer the applicant's assertions that any buffering installed near the roadway to help limit the impact area of what's coming through that roadway would be obstructive to them. The reason I'm showing the discrepancy between the historical conditions and the current limited buffering deemed seemingly adequate by Mr. Heacock is because the loss of this prior protection is again contributing to the focused impacts at that northwest corner. This is a diagram in A56. You'll recognize this as one of the relief options sought in this appeal. There are alternative options also available in A157 and A158. We believe that the historical positions of the trees at that corner show that such protective buffering in the future would not be obstructive. And frankly, if the permit was not after the fact, and the timber trespass victims would still be in place. In other words, those fir trees that we saw would still be in place. Some of the younger cedars in the area could have been retained to satisfy buffering requirements. I'm highly concerned that, and this is a running theme that you'll see through this appeal, that the mitigating conditions are being diminished because this action occurred as a violation 6 years ago. In other words, if the perspective of this is being viewed 2020 and beyond, we believe that it is not meritorious, especially for SEPA, and that's a core of our argument, which is why, in part, we're going back and showing what existed before. Moving on to A134, I know we're running up here on lunch soon, so let's see how much of that I can wrap up. Also at issue, of course, is the preemptively planted buffers deemed adequate by Mr. Heacock and their installed size. We've heard in Mr. Heacock's testimony that these will be inspected. He's commended the applicants for planting these. However, they still need to pass inspection. The concern here is that the trees planted in this northwestern area, as well as the northern buffer, generally range in size from 1 to 3 feet in height. And per Title 17500 and Mr. Heacock's guidance from the email shown earlier in Exhibit A66 and his testimony, these trees must be potted nursery stock of 6 feet in height, and they must be accompanied as shrubbery with shrubbery as well. This is why we are significantly concerned about the discussion in the county's conditioning stating that the existing plantings are adequate and sufficient, because quite frankly, they don't meet the requirements for Title 17. Moving on to A143. Shown in this exhibit is the kind of nursery stock that my wife and I purchased from the Brothers Greenhouse in Port Orchard in 2019. Fabulous supplier of trees, by the way, to supplement buffers within our own parcel. In other words, we were making efforts to protect ourselves from this action at this time. They were placed in a row 22 feet from the boundary with the applicants to keep them out of the easement area. So these are primarily just for size reference. In A149, 5 years later, and as you see this exhibit, these trees planted in the second row, the back row of this photo, and also seen in exhibits A146 to A148, have not yet formed a solid barrier. Some of them are 9, 15 feet tall, but they have not formed a solid barrier, even with summer watering and the surviving vegetation in the easement behind them. In A142, we see the front row planted, that the trees we were just talking about, the larger 6 foot, 4 to 6 ones were planted in the back where these stakes were located. There is a front row of those planted from smaller stock, closer to what originally has been planted on the applicant's parcel. These plantings on the applicant's parcel that Mr. Heacock viewed and from what we can see reduced conditioning due to are nearly identical to what my wife and I planted here. The growth progress on these rows in our parcel is important. Because, and I'm not going to show them to you, but if you go from this, which is A142, but then look at A144 and then A145, you can see the growth progress of these trees at 2 to 5 years, respectively. And what you'll note is that these smaller trees, despite all the care for them, the amendment, the watering, have not outgrown at all the larger 4 to 6 trees that went in, 4 to 6 foot trees that went in. And none of it, of course, forms a solid barrier. In A145, this is essentially illustrating the point that I had just made. It is, you know, the back row is still consistently larger than front row, but has not formed a solid barrier. So despite this, in F34, and Mr. Durland, I believe you had brought this up earlier today. This is the revised acceptance letter. Revised conditions. This is essentially where we're all focused here. Mr. Heacock is apparently removed, although he claims now he doesn't recall this or blame Mr. Smith, and Mr. Smith can't recall it either. Has apparently removed Title 17500 guidance explicitly in the final acceptance letter. It has been removed from the permit's conditions as listed online. This is exhibit, again, F34. We are very concerned that this preemptive conifer buffer by the applicants, deemed adequate by Mr. Heacock, seemingly in lieu of Title 17500, will not provide any substantive solid buffering as required by the CEPA determination for another 10 years or more. And that's on top of the 6 years of impacts we've already experienced to this point. That's an awfully long time to sacrifice our rural enjoyment because of the after-the-fact nature of this action. I have asked Mr. Heacock personally in a meeting in December 2024, what do we do about the fact that the impacts have already been there for 6 years and this buffer is going to take a number of years to become solid? And he shrugged. I mean, there's not, there is no answer. We're just going to have to deal with the impacts. Okay, there's one last issue that we're going to be covering here. Do we want to save it until after lunch? I don't think I can get through it, Your Honor, in 4 minutes.
Okay. Let's take our lunch till 1 o'clock. We'll come back then. That's a good idea. We'll see you.
Thank you.